speaking to a man who wrote a book bringing together a number of minds, a number of academics and minds as they investigate traditional leadership across South Africa from KwaZulu-Natal and the Northwest to the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape and Gauteng. The book is entitled Traditional Leaders in a Democracy, Resources, Respect and Resistance. And he's our guest this afternoon. That's Dr. Mbongiseni Buthelezi, Executive Director for the Public Affairs Research Institute, as we try to understand all these issues a little bit better. Good afternoon, Mbongiseni. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Azania, and thank you for having me.
You know, even when I was referring to all of these cases, I was very mindful of the fact that I'm probably not even using the right terminology. Because in this country, we have so many different groups with different ways of referring to the royals, the royalty, the traditional leaders within their communities, those that are recognized and so on. So what is the right terminology? And some people also have criticized the term chief or chieftaincy.
There is no right term, at least in the English language, because as you say, in almost every language in South Africa, there's a way in which traditional authorities are referred to. For purposes of legislation in South Africa, the term that's been adopted is traditional leaders, traditional leadership. And it's one of the points we make in this book that the Mapungubwe Institute for Strategic Reflection has published, which is there is no uniform term. And terms like chieftaincy have a colonial resonance to them and are offensive to some people. The best we can do really is to call them traditional authorities, traditional leaders. But even that itself carries its own inaccuracies. Because, to call leadership that exists in the present traditional also I think carries with it a whole set of connotations about the meaning, the position of that leadership.
Absolutely. I think I do agree with you on that, because why can't we simply call them kings where it does apply, or queens where it does apply? Let's understand this hierarchy, because within some communities there are kings and queens, and then in others there are deputies, there are other aspects to this hierarchy that are recognized.
So, I think we should, there are at least three levels, but again, it varies from community to community across the country. In terms of the legislation we have, again, there are kingships and queenships. Mm-hmm. And I'm referring here in particular to the 2003 legislation, the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. And then the commission that came out of that law, which was commonly known as the Nhlapo Commission, which we can get into later.
Yes.
It used at least three levels, and those levels are kingships and queenships. Mm-hmm. And then below those, you've got what is called traditional leadership. Below those, you've got what used to be called headmen and headwomen. It would be izinduna in isiZulu, for example. Mm-hmm. It's those three levels that I think we often speak about that exist most commonly in many communities across the country.
Yes. So, now we've got that sense, we've gotten that terminology out of the way. And now we've seen over the years, not just with the three cases that I've mentioned, that the way in which traditional leaders have ascended to their positions, it's been a source of legal action in recent years. And I guess it speaks in a lot of ways to the damage that had been done by the apartheid era. And also, I think it's also powerful cause within this kind of institution that there would be constant contestation of who should sit in that chair.
There will, I think, be contestation, but the history of it goes well back, way beyond the apartheid era. The areas where I've done research on the eastern part of the country, including Swaziland, KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape, it goes back to the advent of colonialism, to the arrival of European settlers, and to the ways in which gradually over time, especially in the 19th century, if you think about the 100 years of the so-called Xhosa Wars, wars of what have been called wars of dispossession, which recently historian Nomalanga Mkhize has called actually wars of repossession. There was, it was a process of taking over gradually people's land, but also reforming the institutions that it used to exist. So prior to the advent of colonialism, in many places, people lived under leaders, political leaders. I want to put that up front, that traditional leadership is political leadership of a certain kind. And that was the norm in Southern Africa prior to the advent of colonialism. But it was also not a stable situation. The way in which people ascended to a throne would either be through succession, but that succession was not always uncontested. So it would also be through usurpation sometimes, where somebody who was in a line that was supposed to succeed to the throne would either be killed, or there would be a version of a coup against them. And so there was always that kind of contestation. A lot of these, a lot of communities had ways of managing those contestations, so that those contestations, sometimes they would turn violent, but at other times they were managed internally by what is now called traditional councils, again, using the language of our law in post-apartheid South Africa.
Yes.
And those ways of managing it would be either there would be a council that could step in when there was contestation and decide who would be the appropriate leader, or the person who, say, a leader who died would be expected before they died to name who would succeed them. When it did come to violence, sometimes you had groupings, perhaps splitting sometimes, where some people who were part of a group, I could even use the example of the Buthelezi. If a certain grouping of the Buthelezi did not recognize the authority of the king, the Inkosi, could also hive off and go and give their allegiance to somebody else, or even among themselves, actually nominate somebody to become their leader. So they'd call themselves the people of so-and-so, became their leader. And gradually over time, may even come to use that as their surname. Which is different to the original surname of the grouping that they came from.
Yes, and I guess that's part of the work that the Ntlapo Commission had to do, even though their work there were issues about the time that they spent, the way in which they researched and did their interviews, and the conclusions that they came to. But they, at the end, and I'm not even sure if these conclusions mean anything today because of how they were disputed, they found that there were only 6 legitimate kingships in the country, even though issues were raised beyond that, a court case ensued. And so on. But how many are there?
I couldn't tell you how many there are. That was exactly the work of the Ntlapo Commission.
Yes.
And the thing we've seen is that almost every determination made by the commission has been subject to some kind of challenge, whether legal or political. I think the issue that it goes back to the ways in which the institution has evolved over the last, let's say, 200 years, for argument's sake. And the ways in which, particularly, I think, in the last 100 years, in the latter phases of colonialism, in the Union of South Africa, but also under apartheid, people who did not toe the line of the apartheid government, of the various colonial governments, were removed. And people who were acquiescent would then be installed in those positions. So what we're facing in the present, or what we've faced over the last 100 years, is then that there's a challenge to the position of such people. There are even communities through forced removals that were put under the authority of traditional leaders that they did not recognize.
They were imposed.
People who had a hand in their forced removals, in fact, and they are losing their land. And so those are some of the, that's the mess we're sitting with today. The state, in many ways, has not addressed adequately.
Yes.
The Ntlapo Commission has been one attempt, but the mess is so big, and the state keeps retreating when there are opportunities to address it decisively. What we're sitting with, where we've ended up today, is that there are 2 laws before Parliament, and there's going to be a march, and there's a mobilization against them coming in June.
Yes.
That is going to make the mess even bigger, according to critics.
And well, we're going to continue to unpack some of these issues. Let's take a break right now. If you want to give us a call, questions that you'd like to raise, because this is quite an impressive collection of thoughts and essays by different contributors. The book is entitled Traditional Leaders in a Democracy. And we'll look at that relationship between the traditional leadership system and, of course, democracy. They impact on each other, and the unfolding relationship is what we are witnessing now.